Hi, and welcome to the second ever episode of No Meat Athlete Radio. I'm Matt Frazier here with Ben Benoulis, and today we have our first guest, and a pretty special one at that. In case you don't know him, Robert Cheek is a vegan bodybuilder, a former NCAA distance runner, an author, a speaker, and most recently he's been on the team at Forks Over Knives, as I'm sure most of you have seen. So Robert, thanks so much for being here, and how are you doing?
I am excellent. I'm phenomenal. Thanks for having me.
Great. Yeah, I'm really excited to have you. I know we've been trying to hook up something like this for a long time, ever since we talked on the website almost probably a year ago now. But since then, we have gotten to hang out quite a bit, actually, especially in the past few months. So I'm really excited that we finally got to make this happen, and I know that Ben is also.
Yeah, thanks so much. I'm excited too, and thanks for having me on the show. And I think we're gonna have a fun time today.
Yeah, I do too. So what we wanted to talk about, and this was Ben and I both agreed on this one, that what is really cool about you and what we always take away from any interactions with you is a sense of motivation and inspiration like no other. So that's kind of what we wanted to steer the conversation towards today. So I guess to get us started, can you just tell us a little bit about your story? And I mean, I know we've talked about this before, but so that everyone knows, like, how you got into being a vegan bodybuilder, the reasons you do it, and just kind of what keeps you going.
Yeah, absolutely. I grew up on a farm in Corvallis, Oregon, and I was involved in raising animals like a lot of people were in that kind of farming community, agriculture community that I was in. And so I had a really deep connection with animals at an early age. And the same kind of connection that you might have with a cat or a dog, I, as a farm kid, had, you know, with rabbits and chickens and cows. That's just the way it was. And I was always the smallest kid in class. You know, I was one of these skinny, scrawny kids. I even remember, I mean, I distinctively remember that in fourth grade, being the smallest boy in the whole class, and fifth grade as well. And then going into high school and knowing that I was only 89 pounds when I was 14, you know, about to go into high school. And this really small kid, but I always idolized these really big, strong guys. I mean, I grew up watching pro wrestling, watching cartoon characters like He-Man and Captain Planet. I wanted to do that for me, for my own reasons. And I also liked the messages that a lot of these people and these cartoon characters stood for. I mean, you think about it, these big muscular people who were always there to try to help out and do good and save the day and have a motivational, uplifting message at the end, just trying to do good things, being nice people and positive role models to others. I wanted that as a kid. I mean, I really distinctly remember that. And so I went for it. I became vegan in 1995, 15-year-old kid, barely 120 pounds. Wasn't sure if it was going to work out for me to maintain the diet as a five-sport athlete, but I did. I did all the way through high school and then into college where I ran cross-country. And then after I put down the shoes with laces for a while, I started putting on the weightlifting gloves, and that changed everything for me. I just followed my own personal interests, just like I had done earlier, and embraced a bodybuilding lifestyle. And from there, added a whole bunch of weight and kind of stopped being that skinny, scrawny kid and got up to almost 200 pounds, winning competitions, wrote a book recently, and have been touring for years. And it's been a really fun ride.
Gotcha. So I have to ask, Robert, what were those five sports that you played? I knew you were a runner, but I didn't know about these other ones, I don't think.
That was the same question I was thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I started out playing soccer early on. That was my favorite sport. Soccer and basketball actually were two of my favorites, and I continued those through, you know, into high school, and I even played on the number one ranked team in the state of Oregon. We just won the state championship the year before I made the varsity team, and I remember being a starter on the team, on the number one team in the state, and it felt really cool because I was back then I was into that work ethic and drive and motivation and passion, and I pushed myself all summer long, just practicing hours and hours a day when other people were out goofing around or playing around or hanging out with friends. I was just doing drills and just trying to be the best that I could. And I ended up being a pretty good soccer player. And that was a really fun time for me, and that made up a lot of the time that I spent in high school. Even on lunch breaks, instead of going out to eat, or I would practice soccer. And so that was one of the sports that I did, and basketball was another. And when the basketball team didn't work out, as I got into the later years in high school, then I joined the wrestling team. And when I decided, even though I was on the varsity soccer team, that I didn't really fit in with a lot of the other players, and it just wasn't a great fit for me, I decided to stop that, and I ran cross country my senior year. And I was always doing track in the spring. So I had in the fall cross country or soccer, and then in the winter basketball or wrestling, and then every single year I had track and field, and I ended up doing every single event except for four. I even threw the javelin, I did the hurdles, I did the 3,000 meters, I did long jump. There were only four that I didn't do, and those were pole vault, a little bit intimidating for me. And for some reason, I never competed in triple jump in contests or the 110 high hurdles, and there was another one, but it must have been one of the relays or something, but other than that, I did every single event that I could.
That does not surprise me at all for some reason.
Wow, that's pretty cool. So I have to say, this is Ben here, I really enjoy just seeing your undying enthusiasm and, you know, on Twitter or on Facebook and stuff like that. And, you know, you talk about, you know, you've always had this drive and motivation, even in high school practicing soccer, but you must have setbacks like, you know, everybody else. How do you just stay so positive all the time?
A good question. I'm glad you asked. I'm glad you acknowledge the enthusiasm rather than the obnoxiousness, if that's even a word, of my Twitter and Facebook activity. And really, I like to talk a lot about those types of things when I give talks around the country. I talk about where this compulsion came from to excel at something. And basically, it came from, at a very young age, I understood how beneficial life could be if one just found out what one's passion was and could embrace it with enthusiasm and resolve to be the best in the world or in their own world, you know, whether that's in your own neighborhood or school or state or whatever. But I use that term loosely, be the best in the world at what you do. And that's what I embraced as a kid. I'm sure it comes from my parents. I'm sure it comes, there's part of it is the DNA I got from my family of working hard. Part of it came from the farm where I sometimes had to do hours a day of chores, feeding cows and feeding chickens and watering ducks and geese and doing all of these things every single day that was expected of me before I could do what I really wanted to do, which was hang out with friends or play sports or practice. So that was instilled in me at a young age. I was, you know, I don't want to use the word forced, but that's what it felt like. I was forced to take public speaking classes. I was forced to learn all these different skills that later on in life would determine what I do and would assist in everything that I do. And basically, I always wanted to be first. I wanted to be fastest. I wanted to be best. I wanted to contribute the most. I wanted to give back the most. I wanted to smile more than anyone else. I wanted to maximize 1,440 minutes in a day, and somehow I knew that as a kid. And so when it came to athletics, I could do that. I could set aside all that extra time to practice when a lot of other people weren't doing that. I remember staying out in the barn shooting baskets until midnight, until my family had to come tell me to go to bed, but I had to make a certain amount of free throws before I could, you know, retire for the night. It was that kind of thing. And I always knew I had a little bit of an obstacle or hurdle or something to overcome because I was a smaller kid, and I was trying to compete at a high level in a lot of these sports like basketball where you tend to have to be a little bit bigger, or soccer got to be a little faster and stronger, or wrestling where you've got to, you know, you only rely on yourself, nobody else. So I've just embraced that my whole life, and I can do it now. Obviously, there's a lot of obstacles. There's a lot of struggles. I'm in an industry or in a movement trying to promote veganism where 99 point something, the rest of the world isn't and doesn't agree and does things, in fact, that I see as just devastating, taking the lives of others and only thinking of ourselves and our own end game and not worrying about the next generation or the next species or whatever. It can be very frustrating and very daunting to think about that, but you have to be able to think a few steps ahead. And the same thing goes back to when I was a skinny kid trying to become a bodybuilder. I was able to think a few steps ahead that a few years from now, it's going to be a lot different than lifting these little tiny weights. Eventually, they're going to turn into big weights. Eventually, there's going to be some sort of response that I'll benefit from, and my body will change. My lifestyle will change as a result. That's the same thing I look at with the world around us. It's intimidating at times, but if you can see a few years ahead, knowing that every action helps get to an eventual achievement or destination, you just keep going and realize that smiling helps everything along the way.
Well, that's pretty neat. And I just this weekend, I think, Robert, we talked about the same thing, as you just said, with taking very small steps and trying to see maybe years in the future. That kind of makes what might be a lot of work now worth it. So that's very cool, and it's very cool to hear you say that again. So speaking of this weekend, we were in Boston together and had a – I wouldn't call it a tough 2 days, but I can imagine that if – for those who don't know, we were at the Boston Vegetarian Food Festival, and we had booths right next to each other, which was fun, of course. But that's only the third one of these things I've ever done. And Robert, you've probably done 500 of these things, I'd imagine, right?
Not quite 500, but somewhere between 50 and 100. I was looking at my spreadsheet recently, and it's somewhere between 50 and 100. But I've been to a lot of these festivals around the country, so yeah,
right.
The last
okay, and
six
you're,
years,
and you're also,
pretty well versed.
Yeah, and you're also speaking at a lot of them, and you are driving to and from a lot of them, and you know, for many months out of the year, this has been what you do, your full time thing. So what we wanted to know is how in the world do you find time? I mean, it's a tough few days to do that, to set up, be there all day, be turned on all day, and then, you know, close down, be exhausted, then get up and do it again. So how do you find, I mean, not just staying positive, which you've already answered, but the time to just to eat healthy and to stay fit and active and, you know, get some time for yourself. How do you find time to do all that stuff when you're traveling and working like this?
Being on the road is definitely tough. I mean, just when I saw you in Boston, that was my third festival in 1 week. I had been in Orlando, Florida on Saturday, and in DC Thursday and Friday, and then Boston Saturday. So really three festivals in that 7 or 8 day period. And it's tough. It's because, like you said, you are always on. I always know that I'm on stage, you know, that people are watching, people are, you know, they're expecting something of me, and I want to rise up to that. I want to live up to those expectations. I want to exceed those expectations oftentimes, and that's why I'm trying to be very lively and interactive with the audience. And it's very challenging to be able to fit in eating healthy food, exercising, all of those things. But I've done this enough that I can keep a lot of food around me, especially fruit. I keep a lot of bananas. They're very easy to eat when you only have a few moments to eat during these festivals because they get so busy. I keep other fruits around. I keep maybe energy bars or protein drinks, something like that. And I put in those 15 hours a day, and then I evaluate at the end of the day based on what my interests are. Am I competing right now? Am I in the middle of competition training? And do I need to go to the gym? And then wake up again before the festival starts early in the morning and do another workout? Or in this case, can I benefit from a little bit of extra rest because I don't get a whole lot of that? So I make that decision. And oftentimes that decision is to train. And I may be up till 1 o'clock in the morning training at a Holiday Inn Express fitness center, but that's what it takes if I want to reach those goals that I have. So I just have to manage my time really, really well. And so I spend all that time with the thousands of people, you know, on stage, knowing that I've got to present myself well and do the best job I can. And then I can remove myself, go have some dinner, relax a little bit, and take a little bit of downtime, and then get myself to the gym if need be. And I just try to do the best that I can to manage time in order to achieve all those things.
Gotcha. So there's no real secret then. It's just a matter of wanting it bad enough and planning for it.
Yeah, exactly. There's no secret. There's no formula. You just have to take it moment by moment, because sometimes you are so exhausted, you really have to call upon a lot of inner strength to get you through to the next day. And if you want something bad enough, you'll do that. It becomes second nature. You know that it's just part of the discipline, part of the practice, that if you want to stand out and be anything other than average, and if you want to make a difference, and because the reasons are so profound that you want to make a difference, to help animals, to better yourself, be a role model for others, then you do it, and you do it with as much effort and enthusiasm as you can. Go to sleep and start the next day and do it all over again.
Yeah, gotcha. And I like your tip about having fruit there at the booth, because I think for these things so far, I'm averaging like two sticky buns and a little cheesecake, vegan cheesecake per festival right now, because I can't resist
and
it.
Pizza.
Like, I never get that stuff.
And the pizza. Don't forget the pizza
right,
in Boston.
Right, of course,
I remember,
yes.
I called you out on that. You're the vegan pizza, and I was sitting there behind the booth with like a Vega bar or something. So,
right.
Yeah, just plan ahead next time. I'll give you some tips then.
Robert, you're obviously a motivating guy for a lot of people, but what do you, read or do, or who do you listen to when you need some motivation?
That is a really good question. And I grew up throughout my life without having a whole lot of role models that were famous people or motivational speakers. I've never listened to a video of anything like that from Tony Robbins until just recently. I did for fun after I'd already written some books, because I didn't want any outside influence for my own motivational books. I wanted it to be my own material. I always stuck to myself. I had a lot of role models that were like my older sister, or my parents, or teachers, specific teachers in high school that I remember, coaches. These are the people who lift me up and challenge me, and people who I still give credit to today in my writing, in my books, in talks, with people who change the way that I look at things. But these days, I get inspired by so many things. And it's funny you ask the question today, because it's been a stressful, really stressful and exhausting week out here, with so many festivals in 1 week, so much travel and a lot more travel still to come. And just yesterday, I took some time to do exactly that. I turned on my computer and I started listening to a number of motivational videos, and there are people you may not even expect. Someone like Will Smith. And I love Will Smith, and I love his work ethic, and I love his drive, and I love the way he summed up some things yesterday. And really, I mean, it absolutely resonated with me, and I called upon that motivation today, when I was dragging a little bit because of so many things on my mind. But Will Smith was talking about how, so many people will say that so-and-so has a bunch of talent. So-and-so is just blessed with talent, and that therefore they're successful. And he doesn't really see it that way. He didn't think he was anything special, didn't have a whole lot of extra talent that other people didn't have. But he had what he describes as an absolutely ridiculous, and he had another word, let me think of it. he said, I have an absolute, ridiculous, sickening work ethic. And that's what has made him successful. Just this sickening work ethic, where he said something. He said, if we're ever on a treadmill together, only two things are going to happen. You're going to get off first, or I'm going to die trying. Because my work ethic, my drive means that much to me, that I'm willing to die for it. And he said that a bunch of times. And it was cool to hear that, because he's not – aside from his whatever high school basketball days, he's not an athlete. He's not someone in the vegan movement. He's not someone who you might think I might connect with necessarily, but he's a very successful person, very driven, and there's a reason, very deliberate actions he took. I also listened to something quite interesting last night, too. It was someone talking about Michael Jordan, when Michael Jordan retired from basketball and went to pursue baseball. This was after his father died, and he wanted to go pursue baseball in honor of his father, who always loved baseball and wanted Michael to be a baseball player, I think. So the sports writer was talking about Michael Jordan, where he was He would get up before the sun got up, and he would drive to the ballpark. He was the first guy there, and he would meet with the hitting coach and go over every little thing that he could do to improve and work with him and work with him and work with him. And he would stay all day long working to improve, and all the other players would go home at the end of the day, and he would still be there. And then he would talk to the hitting coach saying, you know, I think I improved. I think I got this. I think I can do this. And what was really neat about the sports writer talking about this is that he said Michael Jordan, he wasn't very good, and they knew he wasn't very good. And so he had to work harder than others. He didn't have this inherent skill set or magical ability to just excel naturally. And so he had to just work harder than anybody else was willing to work. And that resonated with me and connected with me because I've often said I have no business in bodybuilding. Being a skinny, scrawny kid growing up and a college distance runner on top of that, you don't exactly see cross-country runners as some of the biggest, strongest, toughest guys. Bodybuilding was pretty far from what was expected of me and wasn't necessarily in the cards, if you will, as many would say. But it was something that meant a lot to me, and I did what a lot of people, I think, failed to do, and that's to check in with their heart and to find out what really means the most to them and what do they really care about and what do they want to do. And I did that, and it made for a inspiring story and a successful bodybuilding career during the time that I've competed. So when I look for motivation, I look at those kind of people. I look at the people who have pursued their passion, who have excelled and have become the best in the world at what they do. Jay Cutler is a bodybuilder. It's a great role model for me. I know Arnold's a great role model for a lot of other bodybuilders. Michael Jordan, people like that who have just had this incredible drive that imagine if each person had even just part of that, what they could achieve. And I look at that and I think about it, and that's the stuff that really inspires me and makes me want to just demand more for myself and continue to improve and be better and better each time.
Yeah, I noticed that you know, your book had a whole section on you know, just wishing well for people and wanting to motivate them. And now I know that you're working on a new book. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what it's about and what you want to accomplish with it?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been writing for a while now, and it's hard to exactly say when the book's going to be done. I'd like to say sometime early next year, but I just don't know. And it's a personal development book, so it's a lot different than Vegan Bodybuilding and Fitness book that is out now. Totally different genre, totally different theme, has actually really nothing to do with veganism or fitness. But it has everything to do with thinking differently. And that's the working title at the moment, as long as it gets approved and isn't too similar to Apple's theme of Think Different. But the main theme that I've been talking about in my talks is to get people to think differently. That if we can just think about our own abilities, our own confidence, our own courage to pursue something that we're passionate about, if we can believe that we have what it takes to do these things, that these things can become reality in our own lives, we can absolutely change the outcome of what we're doing. If we can learn to think differently about how we interact with other people, about how we interact with animals, about what we decide what to eat and what not to eat, and how we use our one precious 1,440 minutes in a day, if we can maximize that based on what we care the most about, which will make us smile the most, which will make us the happiest and the most motivated and the most inspirational for others, we get this incredible trickle-up effect. And so I have these little small chapters that I think are really, really important. For example, one is the ROI of life. We always talk about our return on investment when it comes to finances. We almost always refer to ROI as a financial situation, whether it's return on investment on housing or renting or stock market or investing or mutual funds or whatever. But we don't talk about the return on investment of enjoying what you're doing every day and living for 7 out of 7 days, not just the weekends. And the ROI of smiling and being totally happy and content, and how that impacts your ability to then want to go exercise, want to eat healthy food, want to be a nice person to the people around you. this ROI of life is something that we're just overlooking. We all have the same amount of time. That's one thing we can't change. So it's unfair to say I don't have time for something. People will say I don't have time to make this kind of food, or I don't have time to exercise, or I don't have time to pursue what I'm really passionate about. But it's absolutely not allowed, because it's a common truth we all share. The time that we have, it's managing that time based on what matters most that makes the difference between sometimes achievement and not achieving something. So this book is aimed to talk about the beginning. Why do you believe what you believe? You know, how did you come to those conclusions? Why are you totally driven and passionate and excited and enthusiastic, or why are you not? And how can we look back on all the decisions that we've made early on in life that develops our character trait and what we look for in a person and how hard we're willing to work and apply ourselves? And how can we reflect upon that and evaluate that and quantify that and how it impacts today, the here and now, and the decisions that we make today, understanding that every single day that you delay taking action based on what you're passionate about, you delay that outcome, you delay that achievement. And for most of us, we'll never get there because we're missing that action part. And then there's another section about the future, about where we're headed, where we're going, and how today's actions absolutely dictate and reveal what our future is going to be like. And it's a lot about transparency, and it's a lot about priorities. For example, every single one of us has met someone who says, my priority is this. Yet their actions are 100% contradictory to that. How many people have you met, Ben, who say, you know what, my priority is to lose weight, yet their behavior is counterproductive to that. Or my priority is to get straight A's in school, yet their behavior is completely the opposite. Or my priority is to spend less money on going out to eat at restaurants, whatever the case is, but their actions are different. So this is everybody, and most of us just absolutely aren't aware of it. So if we can understand that nothing dictates and reveals what our true priorities are, like our actions, then we can make some sort of headway, and it all starts with being transparently honest with ourselves. What are we really doing? What are we not doing? And how can we change our behavior in order to get where we're going and think differently?
Well, that sounds awesome, Robert. And it's kind of cool because I know when we first started talking about this kind of stuff, I told you that I was a big Tony Robbins fan. And you told me what you said a minute ago, which was that you purposely avoided him and a lot of other I guess you'd call them self-improvement gurus, because you didn't want that to color your particular writing and your thoughts on it. So it's neat to hear you bring up some of these same ideas that I've heard. Like, I've heard him many times talk about that time is the one thing that we do all have an equal amount of. We may not have equal opportunity, we may not all have equal finances, but we do all have equal time, and it's a matter of organizing your life the way that matters to you. And then, of course, the idea about procrastinating, and that there really are only so many tomorrows. And you know, every time you decide to do something else that's not your main priority, you are putting that off, and you're using up one of those tomorrows, or 1,440 of those minutes. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. Right? Exactly.
So it's cool to hear
you
mention.
Calculator nearby?
Yeah. It's cool to hear you mention those same topics, but with like a different spin on them.
Yeah, I appreciate that, and I didn't know that. Like you said, I've only listened just recently after I already finished my books. I listened to a couple videos or audio tapes of Tony Robbins. I mean, very short stuff. I just deliberately wanted to pave my own way, and that's me. You know, I mean, I think a lot of other people, in fact, millions of people, can benefit from listening to people like Tony Robbins, or even who knows, listening to some of the stuff that I have to say. I just always wanted to come to a lot of these conclusions on my own. I just wanted my own experiences, testing things out, jumping inside the fire, and and really putting myself in a position to succeed or fail. And, you know, I've said this expression a bunch lately, just to some close friends and some other people. And I think I mentioned it in my vegan bodybuilding book, but I heard Michael Jordan saying it yesterday watching that video. And it's the idea that, I failed over and over and over and over again in my life. And that's why I succeed. That's something that Jordan said. And I said that in my book too, that I've fallen on my face so many times, but that's because I took those risks. You know, I had the courage to do it. I did the things that a lot of other people were maybe afraid to do, but I did those and I failed over and over again. Sometimes I failed publicly. Sometimes I failed just that only I knew it. But the fact is, you have to try. Some people say there's no try. You either do or you don't, but I don't buy that. You have to try. And if you try and give it your best effort, and you fail, you still learn from that, and you can come back and succeed the next time smarter, wiser, sharper, and just trying to prevent that experience of failure again by just coming out with a different approach.
Yep, and again, that's something that I've heard other people talk about, but not quite in the same way. So I'm really looking forward to that. I hope the title does stay Thinking Differently, but if not, I'm sure they'll come up with something else good for you. So anyway,
yeah.
Robert, the last thing I wanted to just talk about a little bit today was forks over knives, because I guess it was 2 weeks ago or a week and a half ago that you and I went down to D.C. You invited me to go for the screening of Forks Over Knives in front of a few congressmen down on Capitol Hill, which was an incredible time, which I don't know if I actually ever thanked you for that, but I'll do so now. So thank you very much for that. And just wanted to know, like, what has it been? Because I know you've been working with them on the marketing end for, I think, around a year maybe. I'm not positive on the exact number there. But I just want to know what, like, that in the past year, that has grown so much in the number of people who it's influenced. Just to, for those who don't know, it really points out scientifically, it's based on the China study, and really points out the health benefits of a vegan diet, particularly in preventing heart disease, but many other diseases as well, including cancer. And, you know, so just what has it been like to be part of a team like that? I sense a relatively small team, just to see something grow from its relative infancy to something that is now such a powerful force in shaping the way that America eats and the world eats, really.
Yeah, it's been a really incredible ride working with Forks Over Knives. And you're right, it's been over a year since I started working with them. I started giving feedback to the producer before the film was even done. I was invited to a special pre-screening almost 2 years ago now and had the opportunity to see it in its early stages and gave feedback and went to other screenings and invited friends like Brendan Brazier along to give feedback during screenings. And I just became a natural fan. I just became an enthusiastic supporter of Forks Over Knives and started telling everyone about it. And this, with the same enthusiasm I do for whatever else I genuinely care about, and they offered me a job, and I started giving talks and doing screenings months before we were ever in theaters. I was doing screenings around the country, and then I worked in the office in Santa Monica. You're right, with a small team. There's just a few of us working in the office in Santa Monica to just try to get people to start eating plants. And the whole objective of the film is that Forks Over Knives examines the profound claim that we can prevent and even, in some cases, reverse many of our most common degenerative diseases by simply rejecting our present menu of animal-based foods and by adopting a whole food plant-based diet. And it's been amazing to watch that, to see it reach so many people and have tens of thousands of people in a very brief period, and now over 100,000 people see it, owning DVDs and hearing major celebrities who have an incredible influence, as we all know, talking about the movie, saying they adopted a plant-based diet because of the film, they went vegan because of the film, they reclaimed their health because of the film. And it was a really powerful night, even just a week ago when we were sitting there having dinner with Dr. Campbell and Esselstyn from the film, having dinner with Congressman Dennis Kucinich, who's run for president, and his wife, and a bunch of, and the producer Brian Wendell, and a bunch of other people, and I mean, it's so cool to be part of that team, and believing in it from day one that this is going to make a difference, and knowing that we can look back on 2011 and say, wow, man, so glad. I'm so glad I was a part of that, and I'm so glad that the movement was able to benefit from that. And that was a turning point in our history, and that was the time, 2011, 2012, 2013. That was the time where there was a major cultural shift. A former United States president, Bill Clinton, adopting this lifestyle and promoting it on major media platforms all over the television to millions of viewers. I mean, that's special. And that happened right now. That happened this time. And over the next couple of years, I can't even imagine what's going to happen there. And so I just feel very fortunate and very grateful to be part of this team. And it's something that I continue to promote. I'm still out on tour for Forks Over Knives. I'm going to Chicago in a couple of days, continuing the tour. And I'm just happy to do whatever I can to reach people and try to save a lot of human and animal lives.
That's cool. So I remember you were talking about earlier in the interview, you know, you said when you were first starting out and doing all this, and you were just, you know, sort of said you were planting seeds for the future and, you know, putting in the tough work now to reap the benefits later. Did you ever, you know, imagine that it would sort of get to something like this?
I did. And I told Brian every day. I told the producer, Brian, that I said, this is just the beginning. I said, just think months from now or think a year from now. Think of the impact that we're going to have, the difference that we're going to make in the world. Because there were times when all of us were frustrated and we couldn't get some of the media attention we wanted. And we're working 15-hour days. I never take a day off for months because I knew I couldn't. Because it was such a crucial time that we were only in theaters for a certain amount of months, and we're only going to have the DVD really, really popular for a certain amount of time. That's now. And that I had to put everything that I had into it. So I never took a single day off for months on end, and neither did the other guys. I mean, we knew what we had to do, and I kept reminding them, as someone who's seen a lot of projects fail, seen a lot of projects succeed, and been part of a lot of companies that have had amazing growth, like Vega. You know, when I started, my boss had a selling it out of his house, and now it's a $40 million company, inspiring and changing tons of lives and saving lives. I've seen that. And so I kept telling them that, and everyone just kept going. And they knew what we had to do, and they knew what was at stake. And we all put our time and resources into it. And this is still just the beginning. So I look forward to an amazing overall impact this is going to have.
Yeah, and I mean, it already has, and I'm sure it will continue. One thing that struck me as funny was when you mentioned just how it felt even that night on Capitol Hill, like at the dinner, and how kind of surreal it felt to be there with those people and know that some congressmen were there, and one even, you know, had mentioned that it had, how much it had impacted him. But it was just so funny, like walking down the street with you and Brian when we were trying to find my car later, and he, I think he was called, he talked to Gene Bauer from Farm Sanctuary on the phone and was telling him how he was like, oh, hey, and Ozzy Osbourne just mentioned it earlier today on this talk show, and Katy Perry tweeted about it 2 days ago. And it was just like incredible to just see this happening right there. I mean, just realize the impact it was already having.
Yeah, it is crazy. It's real time. It's right in front of us, and to spend time with those pioneers who are, you know, they're not gonna be around forever. They're in their late 70s right now, and they've literally changed the world. And they're gonna be just, I'm talking about Dr. Campbell and Esselstyn, absolutely historical figures who changed the way that America, and hopefully the rest of the world, ate, and how we cured our own sickness and got rid of these man-made diseases. It's just so inspiring to be in their presence. Like you said, some of these people, these major celebrities who have worked incredibly hard in their careers to become famous or successful in their own areas of interest, their own passions, who are now saying, it was Forks Over Knives who got me to finally learn this message. You know, I've finally learned this information. It was Forks Over Knives that did it. And those people, because of who they are and what they've done in their life, they can influence millions of others. And like I said before, this is just a trickle-up effect. It's just going to keep on inspiring many, many more people, and we're all part of that. It's just such a great time to be part of this movement, and knowing the amount of difference that we can make and be able to measure that, it's just so exciting.
Absolutely. So everyone, check out Forks Over Knives if you haven't yet seen it, although you should have by now because it's everywhere. So check that out. And I guess we should end it here, Robert, just because it's getting a little bit late. Thank you so much for doing this. I know I feel as motivated as ever listening to you again. Ben, I'm sure you feel the same way.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so this has been great, Robert. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate the opportunity. I wish you all the best with all your future podcasts and No Meat Athlete Radio. So, and thank you for having me as your first guest. I feel really honored.
All right. It was our pleasure. All right. So that concludes our second episode. I know last time we mentioned that we were not yet on iTunes. I'm happy to report that we now are on iTunes. So you can head over there. I'll put a link at the bottom of this and you can subscribe to the podcast there. We'll shoot for another one of these within the next week or two. And thank you all for listening.